This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
We have Bob Wood with us tonight. He's going to talk to us about mentorship. And I can't wait, actually. So I don't get nervous for these things, but I got to say I'm a touch nervous because I know Bob so well. So Bob is has really become he is my mentor, and he's become quite a good friend. And so I just hope I don't mess this up. So help me out. Don't let me mess this up. So Bob worked for 28 years as a public school teacher. 12 of those years, he worked with special education students. And these are students all across different spectrums, kids that really needed a lot of help, a lot of guidance. And Bob was there for them for 12 of those 28 years. He reluctantly took a job as principal of his school. He wasn't looking to be the principal. But he was tapped to do it. And being a principal of a school is like being a CEO of a fair-sized organization. So Bob had about 1,000 constituents he had to deal with, many of which had different and competing agendas. And he had to balance those agendas between the parents and the teachers and people on the staff at the central office and also just the staff people that worked right there at the school. But the way he balanced those competing demands was brilliant, and I think it's something you guys can all learn from. He never forgot who his customers were. His customers were his students, and as long as the decisions that were made for the right reasons to help the students, then he backed those decisions. And he had to constantly remind people, that's who our customers are here, let's serve them well. As principal, Bob's school was awarded the National Blue Ribbon, which is an award that's given by the First Lady of the United States. That's an award that only 0.3% of all schools get each year. So that's a third of 1%. It's a very distinguished award, essentially the highest award that you can give a public school at a national level. The organizational structure and culture that Bob created has lived on. Bob has since retired, but the school that he was the head of for many years continues to be one of the highest rated schools in all of California, all of Santa Barbara County, and even locally here. It's one of the top schools, which says a lot because we have some very affluent, very involved set of parents here in Santa Barbara's proper, and yet Bob's school continues to outcompete some of those better funded schools. And I think it's really because he set in place quite a foundation. So during Bob's career, he mentored dozens of men and women. We're going to talk about some of that mentoring he did during his long public service career. And despite retiring, he still finds time to mentor people on occasion, some young and some not so young, such as myself. And I'm just very, very grateful for sort of the insight and wisdom that I've been able to gain through my contacts with Bob. And that's why he's here today, quite frankly. I thought, wow, if I can learn this much at age 52, I think my students can probably learn a thing or two as well. Bob earned his undergraduate degree here at UC Santa Barbara in political science, and he went on and earned a master's degree in special education from California Lutheran College. I try to bring folks in here that have a balanced life, that have not just been successful professionally, didn't just make a lot of money, but also had a successful personal life, and Bob is no exception to that. Married to the same wonderful, beautiful woman for all these many years, 2 wonderful kids, and 4 amazing grandkids with another one on the way. So he was able to succeed professionally as well as personally. That's something I want all of you guys to strive to do as well. Let's welcome Bob to our class.
Well, thank you for the introduction,
all right.
John.
That was the easy part.
Jeez.
All right, Bob, so I understand you came to UCSB in 1966. I was 4. which I'm still old. You came here in 1966, so you had a specific reason. What were in your thoughts back then?
Well, I grew up in the L.A. area, and I knew I wanted to study political science, so I really had that passion all the way back to being young. Current events, political science, kind of history, that kind of thing. So I knew I wanted to go to university. And I heard incredible things about UC Santa Barbara in terms of its location, the beauty. The people I knew in my area that went here were kind of people I kind of admired. They seemed like they were balanced. Good students, but they were social and they participated in sports and so forth. So But the kind of the kicker was I was also surfing at that time. And there was in 1965, in an issue of Surfer Magazine, there was a page, and it said, and it showed a picture of Campus Point, and it, like a full page, and a guy was standing there on kind of the cliff looking out at the break, and it said, "Right slide, it only takes a B average."
And you were sold.
I had a B average.
And the rest is history. All right. So you graduated with a political science degree. You weren't exactly sure what you wanted to do when you graduated. You know, this was in the late 60s, right? So Bob kind of wanted to change the world, but he didn't quite know how he was going to do that. So you took a summer job at Elwood School, which is a school very, very near to here. And you ran into somebody that ended up changing your life. Tell us what happened.
Of course, I lived in Ivy, you know, so we have that in common. and this place right here, I don't know if you know this, used to be the Bank of America. And so when I graduated in 1970, we didn't have any finals. They canceled all the finals. Everybody got a pass. And one of the reasons was this bank burned down during the riots.
Don't burn down a bank.
So, yeah. It's a bit ironic to be here. I, of course, did not do any of that, didn't participate in it. I lived on Posado, but I remember looking out, in a duplex above, looking out from the porch and seeing this bank burn. But it was a crazy time, and kind of a confusing time. And so when I graduated, I really didn't have a real focus, not like I sense you people in this class do. So I was a little lost. I took a kind of a part-time, relatively low-paying job. Just kind of, there was a lot of other issues going on, draft, this and that, and all that kind of stuff. But I also kind of said, geez, this is certainly not, I don't want to be stuck in something like this. I wanted to do something that had meaning, had a purpose. So I did some volunteering and teaching in the classroom and all that. Got in the teaching program here at UCSB. And right down the street, I bet it wasn't two blocks down, whatever the street is, there was a summer camp called Operation Kids, and it was run by a very dynamic individual. He'd hired a couple of my friends, and I volunteered there. I just went because it looked like a good thing to do. It was that summer, and I was going to start the teaching program, so why not? Well, it turned out this gentleman who was running the program, his name is Dennis Naaman, and he was the principal at Elwood School at that time. And he just had a tremendous impact on me. And do you want me to tell that?
So what happened? So it's one thing to say a tremendous impact, but I know what a lot of students are thinking is, okay, great, I'm glad you found a mentor, Bob. How do I find a mentor? How do I know when that's going to happen?
Well, it isn't like I found a mentor. It was like here was somebody who was really passionate, really committed, kind of charismatic. And really,
but you learned all that later. So you're
But initially, that's what I saw.
Okay.
And that's what attracted me to kind of the next phase, which is eventually he then became, I would say, over time, a mentor. But I don't know that, you know, it wasn't like I was saying, oh, I'm looking for a mentor. I was like going, in fact, I didn't even know I knew what a mentor was. It was more, wow, this is what I want to do in terms of working with children, and I want some of that passion and focus and creativity, all that stuff.
So, but I want to hear you talk about when you saw him at the bookstore. So you knew who the guy was. You had no relationship with him. You're standing there. All of a sudden, you realize he's standing right next to you at the bookstore. So I want the students to understand that feeling.
Well, it was the Isla Vista bookstore, which I guess is no longer in existence. I was in there, and he happened to be in there. It was the late 60s, so we were probably standing in the psychology section or something like that. That was kind of a 60s thing. And I remember standing next to him, and we just got in a conversation. And as I was talking to him, I just felt this energy and kind of this power, you know, whatever it was. It was like, you ever seen those metal balls that kind of send off static electricity? It was kind of like that kind of energy. And right there, and kind of some part of my being or my head, I said, you know, I'm kind of hitching my wagon to this energy. And we still have a relationship, and that's been 45 years. But again, initially, I was just another student or another student teacher. So that relationship changed over time.
But I remember you telling me that it was a little frightening, it was a little intimidating. It wasn't easy, necessarily, to sort of reach out to a person like that.
Well,
because he was pretty advanced in his career at that point. You were still just starting out.
Right. And, you know, when you are starting out, everything is brand new. It's like brand new territory. So here's somebody who has a much greater mastery. The gap between that is sizable. And it isn't like you just make a giant step to get there, but you kind of start that process.
So another reason why I wanted Bob to come, and I think it's important to share this with people watching this as well as in the classroom here, is that there have been two factors that have been shown to correlate with success after graduation. One of them is an internship, and I want all of you, encourage you strongly to find an internship in your field of study, something that you can test the waters before you graduate. The other one is students that found a mentor while they were still undergraduates had a higher likelihood of success when they graduated. So that's why I think it's really important here in the fall quarter for you to start thinking about, hey, a lot of you are graduating. How do I find that person? How do I make that first step to find somebody that can help me once I graduate from the safe confines of the university? So.
Oh, okay. So, thank you very much for the clue. John and I have been talking. And like I say, when I went through my undergraduate years, I got to kind of my senior year and whatever, and it was just like, I just kind of graduated into whatever. It was the separation between Isla Vista and UCSB and outside life was pretty dramatic. So I have a challenge for you. One of the things I think that's really important to learn, to develop, and kind of practice is your own interviewing skills. Because that's a real gap between where you are now and how you're going to present yourself out there in the future. And we've all gone through it. I mean, I've done it well, not so well, the whole thing. So what we would like you to do is identify three people outside Isla Vista, outside the university, that you could contact possibly and have direct communication with. Now, that could be in person or on a phone. I wouldn't recommend emails and all that kind of stuff. I think it needs to be a more direct communication. And ask the person, and this should be somebody that you really respect, you appreciate what they've done, somebody you look up to. Hopefully there's some age gap here, because usually in a mentor situation, it's not just with your peers. And ask them about how their interviews went, their initial interviews out of college, what worked, how they prepared. And lastly, what would they recommend to you? And again, this is just kind of getting the wheels to spin. There's a whole lot of different kinds of things people can do, and which you will soon learn. But just kind of breaking the ice. So that evidently is going to be a...
It's the Bob Wood Challenge. Take the Bob Wood Challenge. So I would say, you know, find somebody that's not in your family. I mean, family members can be great mentors in their own way, but there's other dynamics that sometimes make those relationships limiting. I'd say find somebody that's not in your family, find somebody that is outside of the university, and that is a good way to break the ice. Because the question I get from a lot of young people is, well, how do I ask somebody to be my mentor? How do I start that conversation? How do I start that relationship? You have to be willing to ask for help, and this is a sort of a nice, logical way to ask for help, and just see where that goes. Just see if that conversation ends up building on itself, or if it just dissipates and fizzles out, that's fine. I think you will be very happy that you started it. And all three may not end up becoming meaningful relationships, but hopefully one of them will, or it'll lead to another relationship through an introduction, or, you know, who knows. But you won't regret doing it. So I'd like to, and we don't have everyone mic'd, so you just really have to shout out loudly so we can pick you up for the cameras. But I'd like to get a few words, sentences, phrases of what mentorship means to you. Tell me, or what is a mentor? Give me some feedback as to when we use that word up here, what are you guys thinking? Go. Give me the first one. Mentor means?
Role model.
Mentor means?
Guidance.
Mentor means leadership. Mentor means?
Respect.
Say that again.
Inspiration.
Experience.
Give me three more.
Knowledge.
Wisdom.
Support.
Say it again.
Support.
Those are great, because those we agree. Those are many of the things that when we were thinking how to describe mentorship to you. And I'll tell you, I didn't use that word until very recently. Like, I didn't walk around saying, oh, mentor this and mentor that. I found it hard to find another word. You can call somebody a coach. I don't know. You can call them a counselor. I'm not sure. There's some more awkward words, but I think mentor is just a nice catch-all phrase that means someone who's walked down a path that you want to walk. That's the way I think of it. So in many ways, Bob has done things in his life, in his career, and post-retirement that have been instructive to me. He's walked down a path that I want to walk. So one way to look at it, one way to think about how do I find a mentor is let's try to find somebody that's in a position now that I want to be in the future. And that could be personally. It can be professionally. That's how you can start to identify who these three people are that you're going to reach out to. So, Bob, what do you think about? I just got to talk a lot about finding a mentor. But I know when you and I sat and talked, there's one thing I really liked that you said as a good first step. Because these mentors have gifts, but before you can really start to identify what gifts you want to cultivate, what were you saying to me that you think the student should do?
Well, I think I kind of see the initial steps in a mentor going down that path as transactional. And it's coming from something that you have identified in yourself or a skill or whatever that you want to cultivate. So when we talk about mentorship, I really think we're talking about a spectrum of roles. You know, you might start at one end being an advisor, at the other end a counselor. So, but there's little steps in between. So what I would suggest is starting off in baby steps and just be thinking about it in terms of you're not in this process, this career process alone, but there are people that you can go to for advice, you can reach out to. And to do that, you need to be available. You need to be able to, you talked about being able to ask for help. That's hard sometimes. Sometimes we like to kind of appear like we're totally on top of it. And so to go to someone that could help you and ask for it is, it's kind of reaching out and taking a step. And it could be a little bit threatening. But it is so worthwhile. Especially when you start seeing people around you who are further along in the process, whatever organization you're in, that know things that are going to take time for you to know. Why not access that? And so that would be, I don't know if that was exactly the answer to your question.
No, but all the answers are good. So I think this is hard, right? This is what's hard about, I think, this setting up these kind of relationships because it's hard to ask somebody for help because why? Because they might say no. So that the momentary pain of somebody rejecting you or blowing you off or making you feel uncomfortable is real, but it is so far offset by the potential benefits of someone who says yes and ends up helping you. In Bob's case, you know, 40-some years where he's had a relationship with someone he met at the Ivy bookstore because he was willing to take that first step.
I get the feeling we're kind of preaching to the choir here a bit, because I think that you are a self-selecting group, chosen this program, certain you're making wise choices. But I think one thing I have learned through the years is the reaching out part, how important that is, the taking initiative part, not just in social interaction. People are out there. And I have found that people in positions that we're talking about, maybe a little more senior and in a management structure or whatever, people like to help other people. And if it's stated in the right way, it's kind of an honor. You're coming to me for, you know, advice on that. And so I would highly recommend just developing that mindset to realize as you start going through these transitions, you're not, it's not a thing where you're just alone in the process.
Yeah. So think about what you're passionate about. Think about what gifts you have and what gifts maybe you want to cultivate. And then you can start looking for people that might be able to either help you cultivate those gifts or maybe help you with new gifts that you're going to need to fulfill your passion. So again, it's a little bit of self-introspection before you go out there and start talking to people. So once people have sort of figured out what is unique, and all of you have unique gifts, need to know what those are. Once you figure those out, what do you think are some other things people can do to increase their odds of establishing a meaningful mentor relationship? And I'll answer that question myself, give Bob a second here, and then we're going to take the first student question. So Bob and I actually have a mutual friend who wanted to establish a relationship with the CTO of a company. The CTO is a chief technology officer. He's a very busy person. I'm sure a lot of junior engineers wanted this person's time, and you know they only had so much time in the day. And so what the younger engineer did is he knew that this CTO every day at lunch was a runner, and he would go run, you know, 15, 20 miles. He's quite a runner. Unfortunately, the younger engineer wasn't a runner. He became a runner. And that was the way he began establishing this relationship with the CTO. Even though it was painful at first, you know, he was not a very good runner, he just stuck with it. And I think the CTO respected that somebody would do that, just to spend time with him, just to ask him questions, just to get some guidance. He realized that this person wasn't a runner, and yet they were going to go to that extreme just to make it work for that relationship. So what do you think, Bob, some of the other things they need to think about to make the relationship work as the younger person?
Well, I think the spending the time, the cultivating, the reaching out. I think it's important that you come, again, initially, you're coming from a legitimate place of you're seeking something that person has that they can help you with. And so there's a naturalness to it. There's not a neediness to it. There's not a sense of entitlement about it, but it's more kind of coming from a kind of a sense of gratitude or a sense of, you know, just, and it's a natural, we're talking about natural relationships. We're not just talking about strolling into somebody's office all of a sudden, somebody that you don't know well enough, but you've already made inroads in that way. That would be my take. I go back to when I first started teaching. I really enjoyed I just did this because that's what I like to do. I ended up team teaching with teachers that were really powerful teachers. One was a young man who was just had this incredible ease with students. This is like teaching third grade. But his class was so fun. And it's a little bit like when I watched John open up this class here. So he had, it's kind of that same energy. I had to follow that, right? But, you know, it was like that kind of thing. And seeing that and having that modeled for me, part of that became who I was in my own way. Then after I'd kind of done that for a couple of years, it's funny, the principal I talked about, sometimes what your mentor will do is give you opportunities. They know kind of where your next step is. And your response is to say yes. So my principal said, hey, what about teaching up at this grade level with so-and-so? And I, okay, I'll do it. Well, that was an incredible gift because this teacher was dynamic, creative, did all kinds of wonderful. She was a former actress, you know, just a female mentor. She was really creative with curriculum. I mean, that's got me all excited about that and really sustained me in my years in teaching. So what I'm saying is the way to reach out is from where's the energy? Where do I want to go? What parts can be helpful to me? But there's a naturalness to the process.
Yeah, I think natural and authentic. So sometimes mentor programs are established by these big, dumb companies, right? They say, oh, we need a mentor program. And what they end up doing is they'll take an older person and a younger person and they'll throw them together. And it's sort of like a forced marriage or an arranged marriage from 100 years ago, where it's like, I know you don't know her and you don't know him, but good luck, you know. And yeah, maybe it'll work. I'm sure some arranged marriages worked over time, but typically they don't work all that well. So the natural, authentic chemistry has to be there. And as Bob mentioned, you can't really force that. And I think you, as the younger person in this relationship, has to be the barometer of whether this relationship is natural, is it progressing, or am I forcing this relationship? I think the onus is on you to do that. I think also to be effective, let's talk about what are the things, I'd love to hear Bob's thoughts on this, to almost guarantee that your mentor relationship will not work out. Like, what are some things that they can do if they run into a mentor that they want to ditch? What should they, how should they act?
Well, I like mentoring people that I felt that really had kind of a core value system that I could really relate to. They weren't necessarily the people that were on the fast track to wherever they thought the fast track was taking them. It was more the people that had the stuff inside that you really wanted to nurture. And boy, this person could be one hell of a teacher or should be an administrator, that kind of thing. So I think sometimes and I've seen, you know, I think we've all seen this, the kind of the blind ambition thing, kind of as a turnoff. Trying to think what else. Maybe coming from a place, like I say, of a sense of kind of entitlement, like I expect you to do this for me, as opposed to that place of appreciation.
Right.
So, you know, I'm kind of fundamental on that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's kind of like, think about how you can anger your parents. So be disrespectful, be unappreciative, be needy, be unresponsive. If you do those things, then you're going to have a really, really hard time establishing a relationship with a mentor. We'll take the first question from the audience.
All right, I want to thank you first for coming along here. It's been a great talk so far.
Thank you.
My question is, the job of a mentor, it sounds like a one-way street. I've had people I've worked with that I consider my mentors, and I've never really known how to show my appreciation to them. So I was wondering if you had any examples that you could think of how people have repaid you or even paid it forward.
That's a really good question. You know, I was a teacher, and so when I went into teaching, that's what I did for children, you know. And so I kind of see it. One thing you could say is a mentor is a teacher or a bit of a guide or however you want to say it. So, you know, the validation would be more that just that genuine appreciation response. There's not something that, you know, I don't need a lot in terms of that kind of feedback. Because that's who I am and that's what I do. And so the other thing is that there is a little bit of self-interest among mentors because, let's say it's a company or it's a school. I want to grow that school to be the best school it could possibly be. Same thing in a business. So when I'm mentoring people, they're becoming, in my eyes anyway, you know, more skilled in whatever the role they are in. So I just like the kind of appreciation that anybody would give for, you know, a transaction like that.
And I'd say don't be afraid to say thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of like it seems old-fashioned nowadays to say thank you, but it's not. People really appreciate it. So most mentors aren't doing it for that reason. They're not sitting there going, where's the thank you? But they're human. Like, they want to know that their time is appreciated. I mean, their time's not free. They have other things they can do with their time. And so that's where that entitlement personality kind of comes in that Bob was referring. Don't feel entitled. They don't have to help you. They're doing this out of the goodness of their heart, and you should appreciate that and show that appreciation. So I got this question. We'll get the next question from the student in a minute. I got this question recently, and I thought it was an interesting one. I kind of want to hear what you guys think. So if a mentor, if you approach him, you get the courage up, you approach a mentor, and you essentially ask them to engage with you as a Sherpa or a counselor or a guide or whatever, and they say no, should you give up or should you approach them again? It's like take another tactic. How many people say approach them again? What do you think? Go back again with another game plan? How many people say go on to another mentor? How many have no idea? So I'll just give you my I don't think there's any one answer. I think personally there's so many great potential teachers out there, you're probably better off finding someone else, you know, where the chemistry makes sense. It might be that person, the timing wasn't right for them, or you asked them at a time when they felt particularly harried, or who knows. But I think it might, I don't know what Bob thinks, I think I would be a little awkward to go back again later.
Are you saying like you would actually say, would you be my mentor?
Well, no, but maybe it's, can you help me with interview questions? Or
sure, right.
Yeah. Would you go back and because again, it's the chemistry. You guys should be looking for that chemistry. It is almost like
That if a person responded like that, that isn't what the person I want to give me advice.
Yeah, yeah. So I totally agree with that. We'll take the next question.
Just wanted to say thank you for being here. And of the young professionals that you have mentored, what would you say was the single biggest indicator to you that these were people who were going to have great success in whatever their endeavors were?
I would say, if you were asking me what I look for in somebody, and especially, like, and I'll talk about this a little bit later in a hiring situation, it's really, I go back to that core value kind of thing, coming from that good place, you know, just the values throughout history that have served us well. But I would also say my sense of the capacity for growth. Because, I mean, that's what I kind of see happening in a career. If you look at, in a career, what you're doing is you're learning. You go, you graduate from UCSB, you kind of know some things or whatever. But then you start putting yourself in positions where you're learning so much about yourself. You're learning about your strengths. You're learning about areas you're not as strong in, and that period, you know, that career is really a becoming a more of a complete person, really learning what your skill, you know, growing to the extent that you can self-actualize. And so for younger people, I'm looking for that openness for that process. And some people, you know, some people, that's not what they want to do. They're just happy doing a job somewhere, whatever, that's fine. But that's not the kind of people that I wanted to grow.
And I think this comes back to the prior question about how do you show appreciation. I think if that relationship is working, both parties are getting something out of that relationship. It shouldn't be one way. If it's one way, it's probably not going to last very long. So that question was a good one. That was, what were traits you saw in folks you mentored that were successful? Let's talk a second about what are some traits, Bob, that you think these students should be looking for in a mentor, besides the fact that they're open to a communication. You know, again, going back to your initial mentors, we talked about passion. You want to find somebody that's super excited about things that you're excited about. What are some other things that come into mind?
Yeah, I would say people that, you know, there's a track record. There's a certain longevity. In terms of what they're doing, there's something that they've sustained over time. They seem to still be young at heart.
Yeah,
there's still that kind of bounce to their step. There's all that.
I think always learning.
So always learning.
The last thing you want is a mentor that's a know-it-all, right? Because that can get old really quick. So someone that you can bring things back to, and they're like, "Oh, I've never thought of it that way," and then you can have a nice dialogue on, maybe a new area of study or a new way of looking at things. So that's one thing I always liked in my conversations with Bob. He's always open to new ideas and certainly doesn't think he has all the answers. And you had mentioned to me, Bob, that being a risk taker, like you want a mentor that's willing to take risks, you know, someone that's willing to push the boundaries a little bit.
That and hopefully that's something you internalize in yourself, because the path I'm talking about entails that. There's going to be transitions. I talked a little bit about an image of, you know, the role of a mentor, but it's like mountain climbing. So most of the time when you're mountain climbing, it's a slog. You're just going up this, whatever you're doing. But then you get into certain things where there's pitches or there's, you know, ledges. And, you know, you need to clip on. And you need a guide or you need somebody that kind of takes you to that section. So in the same way, I think, in kind of the arc of a career, there are some transitions that are just dicier. And it sure makes a whole lot of difference to have somebody who's kind of been through that process before and can support you through it. Now, sooner than you know, you're going to be that guide and you're going to be clipping somebody on and because you've done it, you know, five times or whatever it is.
Yep. No, and you told me there was mentors that spurred you on with just a single comment. So these are people you already had a relationship with, and just by saying one thing to you.
Well, I bet each of us in this room have had, if you think back, there's been somebody that said something to you sometime that was tremendously validating. Could have been a coach, could have been a teacher, you know, maybe a member of your extended family. And the power of that validation kind of never leaves you. I just to illustrate the point, I'll share one from my own childhood. And I knew how to play football, but I really didn't know how to play baseball that well. And Little League had started up and, you know, they had tryouts and whatever. Well, I didn't know how to play baseball. So there was a major leagues and the minor leagues and everything else. And I didn't make any of the teams. And I was on a farm team. And these were all the, you know, the guys that put their hands down to get a grounder and it went through their legs and had a hard time throwing it and everything else. So I'm on this team. I didn't know any better. It was, you know. But so there was an opening on a team, a minor league team. The coach came and said, I'll take him. So I was on this team. For the rest of the season, when I was at bat, I would not swing the bat. I was too afraid to swing the doggone bat. So I'd stand there, and I felt successful that I got to walk, right? That was success. So the last game of the season, my dad was gone a lot. He was an airline pilot. But the last game of the season, he was right behind the backstop, and he said, swing. And I swung at the ball. I probably missed it by 2 feet, but I swung at the ball. That was a tremendous achievement for me. So now we go to the next season. And it's maybe the second, third game of the year. And I'm still on a minor league team, same team. And I'm up, people are on base, and it's a tied game. And I get a base hit. And I'm not even sure what I understood, but we won the game, that base hit. And the coach, not the manager, the head guy, but the second guy, came up. And he looked at me and said, do you realize you're a hero? Well, you know, that can never be taken away. So here was something in my own process. So in some ways, I tell that story just to illustrate the power of the comment at the right time and how that sustains you over time. And a mentor, if you're so lucky, can provide that for you.
Yeah, because you want to live up to that label. Like somebody you respect has just labeled you as something that maybe you're not quite yet, and you want to live up to that label. So it can be very motivating. Next question.
So from what I've gleaned from your presentation, you've portrayed mentorship as fairly rosy or quaint. I'm not sure either of those.
It is.
I don't know if either of those are the right word.
But, that's good.
And then you addressed part of my question about how the relationship's more natural. But so looking back on your experiences, is there any advice or guidance you received that you wish you hadn't followed? And is there any advice or guidance you gave that you wish you hadn't?
That I hadn't or had?
Hadn't given.
That you hadn't given.
Oh. You know, I mean, come on. We're all human. And I have. I mean, there was one time when a teacher, I said something I probably shouldn't have said. And it was probably from my own skill set and my own background. And this was a really, really, really gifted teacher. And she wanted to go off and travel or whatever. And I advised that she should, you know, stay and do what she's doing. No, she needed to go off and do her, whatever her journey was. So, yes, you know, everybody makes mistakes. As far as what a mentor has said to me, you know, I've talked about this. I think I talked about this in my other talk. You're not giving up your own power in these relationships. You have your own value system. You have your, I use the word worldview. And whenever you're in these kinds of situations, it has to resonate with that, any advice you're getting. You know, if it doesn't feel right, it doesn't feel right. And you don't do it. You know, so sometimes you talk about risk taking, but sometimes there's risk that are a little too much. You know, it needs to be kind of, you know, what's the right step? You're not quite ready for that yet. You'll file it away. In a year, you might do it. And I think we talked about, I'll let you ask the next question.
No, I think what you want to be careful of is you don't want a mentor that wants to make you their clone, and you don't want to be their clone. I mean, I think that's an unhealthy relationship. You want a mentor that's open to you being different, and a mentor that's open to you challenging respectfully. So, you know, their position on certain things. I think that's a healthy mentor relationship. Someone who's sort of, why aren't you more like me? It's almost like a bad parent. Like, you know, you've already got two parents. You don't need three. I would sort of flee from that sort of a relationship. Bob, you talked about the comment from the coach, and that was a very cheerleading moment. Very, you know, oh, man, I feel great about that. That's not the only role mentors play. So sometimes mentors can push you a little bit. What happened on the playground?
Well,
you had 15 minutes to make a major decision.
Well, this was kind of before it got to that. But, you know, I told you about the Dennis who did Operation Kids right down the street and all that. So, I mean, I was worked under him as a principalship, and then I moved on, went to another school, and was doing something else. And I really, really loved teaching. It was, you know, I've said this before, but I measured my days in levels of joy. And I kind of looked at administration and being a principal as, oh, man, that'd be a royal pain. I didn't see really a lot of happy principals, not the kind of happiness I was experiencing. So there was always a part of me that wanted it and didn't, you know, why give up something that's so, you know. So anyway, the principal, you know, Dennis, we were just at the school, and I was just walking by, and he was like walking by the sidewalk the other way, and he looked at me, and he just said this off the top. He said, when are you going to grow up and become a principal? And I was 40-some years old, right? And, you know, it's like a little bit like, you know, you were a hero. That kind of stuff doesn't leave you. And it's enough of a, you know, of an irritant in the system that you kind of go, you know what? I know I'm really comfortable. Maybe I'm too comfortable. So, you know, sometimes a mentor can provide a necessary and well-timed kick in the fanny.
Right. And so I had a similar experience. It wasn't a mentor by any means, but it was someone I respected at a company that I was at. And I was in what they call an individual contributor. So I was out there generating a lot of revenue for the company, but I didn't want a lot of people reporting to me because I'm just not a very good manager. Believe me, you wouldn't want me as your manager. But I was pretty good about going out there and getting things done. And this person was very similar to what Bob just described. This person kind of was walking by me one day, and he was nice about it. He's, you know, acknowledging some success I had had. He goes, but, you know, if you really want to advance in your career, you need to start managing people. And then he kind of walked away from me. And that spurred me on because in my next company, I bit the bullet and ended up having to manage a bunch of people. Didn't particularly like it. Don't think I was all that good at it. But I do think that was the right thing for me to do at that stage of my career. So,
now, the ironic thing is I did talk to, later when I did become a principal, I talked to Dennis about that comment. he had no recollection that he ever said anything. So it was just like something that popped out as I walked by, right?
When are you going to grow up, Bob? When are you going to grow up?
I'm working on it.
Let's take the next question.
I think it's very common for us students to turn to our family and relatives for guidance or advices or whatever. Do you think it's reliable to have a close relative as a mentor? Since this, I guess, can become an obstacle in situations where you need to take risks or maybe go through changes.
How close?
Like aunts or...
Well, I think, you know, I mean, look, speak for you, but I mean, our parents were huge. I mean, in a sense, they're the original mentor, right? Are their parents. And so, you know, a relative or somebody that you really respect, sure, for guidance, whatever. But I think we're going to talk about friends here in a minute. But it's not going to hurt, you know, but I don't know that there's enough, there needs to be a certain distance. I mean, what I'm seeing is sometimes what I see in a mentor is they see you, like your friends see you as you are. A mentor sees you in your potential, sees who you could be. And so if you have somebody who inspires you, you know, an uncle that really believes in you, whatever. I mean, my grandmother was wonderful in that way, right? But it's not exactly what we're talking about.
I think it's part of the mix. So I think certainly having a loving, you know, a relationship with a family member that can give you advice is important. And I hope all of you guys have that. But I think you want to balance it with someone who has, as Bob mentioned, more objectivity. I think sometimes it's hard for someone who's watched you grow up to give you the right advice at all times. And I call it the diaper effect. I mean, they changed your diaper, for God's sake. Like, they're always going to have that mindset of you're that snotty-nosed kid, even when you're 40 years old. And so they can give you advice. They can give you good advice. But you also... They can also give you well-meaning bad advice. Well-meaning in the sense that they don't want you to take a risk, or they don't want you to fail, or they're child, you're their niece, you're their nephew. And so sometimes that well-meaning bad advice is something you want to sanity check with someone who is a bit more objective. So I think you want both. And you're blessed if you have somebody in your family that you could look up to. That's wonderful.
You're a lucky man.
So Bob, how will they know when they found this elusive, effective mentor? What are some of the things... How will that manifest itself in that relationship?
I don't want to repeat myself.
Yeah, we've talked about some of these things. So someone that will push you in a kind but gentle way. You know, not somebody who's just...
Well, I would say, and, you know, this. Let's go back to your uncle. You know, I do think that as a relationship progresses, if you're so fortunate and you choose to this kind of path, I think one thing, you know, you're pushed, or you know, you're encouraged to grow and move on, but there's kind of an acceptance of who you are. There's kind of an unconditional acceptance with that. And you know, in any therapeutic relationship, it starts with that unconditional. You're fine just as you are, and that's a powerful thing. So, I mean, there were times when. There's going to be times, everybody in here, all of us have had times of, let's say, some kind of crisis or whatever, something's not going right. And it's pretty wonderful to be able to find someone where you can go in and close the door in an office and really kind of let your hair down a little bit and talk. And sometimes in that mentor relationship, it can grow to that extent. And that's a powerful, wonderful thing.
Yeah, I think
it's nice to have an ally.
Yes. I think it's when you know you can be vulnerable and that's not going to come back at you.
Yes.
I think that's when you know you've really established quite an effective mentor relationship. When you can go in, as Bob says, let your hair down and say things that you might be uncomfortable saying to someone else, and say things that you know aren't going to come back to haunt you later. This person sometimes needs to know these very intimate personal things about you in order to give you that good advice that maybe only a family member would know otherwise. So it's it's not always easy. I mean, that's, you know, we don't live our lives that way. We don't open ourselves up to everyone. And so it's great when you can find a person that you can do that with, and it's respected. Okay, we'll take the next student question.
Hi.
Hi.
So as we've discussed, mentors can heavily influence the lives of their mentees, but I have yet to hear the impact occurring the other way around. So how has mentoring John impacted your life?
Oh, be careful.
Well, John and I, you know, maybe there was a mentorish element where, you know, it's now evolved into a friendship. And I mean, there's things I think that where John is my mentor, certainly around anything financial. I mean, you know, I kind of, John, what do you think about, you know, anyway, so you have that thing. And let's look at it this way. Any relationship that is based on imbalance. So you have a mentor and a mentee, and you know that you got that hierarchical kind of thing. Over time, what you notice is it starts to level. And all good, healthy relationships are built on this. You cannot sustain a relationship that's built on this. So I'd say that in our relationship now, it's much more like this. And there's a lot more give and take. So, I mean, there's a ton of things that I value in John and, you know, that I appreciate. And I.
Well, go on. Let's hear them. I'm kidding. No, but one thing Bob said to me in this regard, I remembered it because I thought it was really insightful, is that, and not all of your relationships with mentors will get to this point, but that when a relationship evolves, a mentorship involves, there is a bit of a passing the torch back and forth and sort of, okay, now I'm the mentor and you're whatever, the protege or whatever. And I know in Bob's relationships with some of the mentors he's told me about, that's happened, where over time they've come to him for guidance, which is a little interesting when you've always been the protege, but you know, obviously if you have that underlying friendship, you help out your friend. So hopefully that's what some of your mentorships will evolve to. And I just want to make it clear, I have really had two mentors my entire adult life. I don't want to make this sound like every week I'm meeting a new mentor. It's crazy. It's just not that way. You know, there's been a lot of people that have helped me along the way episodically, even that one anecdote I told you about where, hey, you really should start managing people. And I've had a lot of wonderful people here in Santa Barbara that have helped me in my career tremendously. But just I've really had two people, and one was 30 years ago and one more recently, where I really think what I would consider just a ton of guidance and wisdom. And so you don't expect this to happen every other day for you. And then when you do find somebody, you know, really try to make that a two-way relationship.
I have another additional comment about that, and I think that relates, and that with my mentor that, you know, when I graduated from UCSB, Dennis and all that, I mean, he had a tremendous impact on me. But there was a certain point, then we kind of developed a friendship. We have a friendship. But at a certain point, I could be a little bit of a mentor for him. In other words, he would maybe be going through something, need advice or whatever, and I could believe it. And, you know, that's it was very satisfying to be able to repay a little bit of that constant giving.
Hi, you've talked a little bit about, or a lot about, your experiences as a mentor. My question to you is, who or what inspired you to become a mentor in the first place?
Well, again, you know, originally my thought was public service and, you know, political science, that whole thing, then evolved into going into teaching. So as a teacher, I mean, that's what I did. I mean, I just helped, you know. I wasn't the kind of teacher where there was a desk and I sat at it. I was the kind of teacher that was never sat down. I was always helping, whatever. So in some ways, and when I did that, and then, you know, you become a better teacher and maybe you go to workshops and you start giving workshops. So in a sense, there was even the thing where they called mentor teachers, where you're teaching other teachers. So it's kind of a natural evolution. And then when I became an administrator, principal, you know, it's like, and I'll talk about this a little bit, but it was like I kind of had to look at that. What do you do in a role like that? I mean, when I first stepped in, you know, the principal, you know. Well, my thing was, once I kind of figured things out, was to get out and around and help people. So, you know, teachers, if they needed something, I was there. I could teach a lesson, So there's kind of a natural, you're kind of out there available, you know what I mean? And then teachers then feel comfortable coming to you for advice or help. And some, maybe it's more of a mentor-mentee relationship. So I'm not exactly sure if that answers.
Was there a point where you sort of woke up and said to yourself, wow, I'm now being a mentor to... Because you go, you know, you're like many of the students in this class for a long time, where you're on the receiving end of a lot of great wisdom. Was there a time? Was there an anecdote, or do you remember, like all of a sudden, you sort of said, "Wow, I'm here. I am dishing it back out."
Well, what happened initially, you know, you want the guidance from people and whatever. As you then go into, you've done it too, where you, let's say, develop a competency. You know, a certain mastery of what you're doing, you don't really need as much of the outside thing. It's like you're more internally directed and you have something to give. And so it's kind of a natural, at least for me, it was kind of a natural transition.
Take the next question.
I have two questions. Does the age of the mentor matter? Let's say just a few years older, but very successful and similar mission and vision of life. Would that be a problem that they're only a few years older? And
let's answer that one first.
Can I ask you, do you think it's a problem? Would you think it would be a problem?
I have someone who offered to mentor me, and she's only 2 years older than me, and she's amazing. So... But I don't know what the limitations are because of the lack of experience, per se, or...
But she's out in the...
Real world.
Real world
things,
and
yeah.
has...
Yeah.
You know, I think it's really hard. Is she like a close friend?
Well, we started off being a mentor-mentee, so, and we're becoming closer friends. Okay. So that, I guess, is a good thing.
Well, I think, you know, we go back... Remember I talked about... You need to have that sense, that instinctual read on that relationship and whether it's of value to you. And my sense is that you're probably pretty good at that.
Well, this has been really fun for me. I think it's been hopefully very informative for all of you guys. Let's thank Bob once again.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.